This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yeah, it's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Monday morning, homeroom, the bell has rung. I left my stinky, stinky shoes in my locker before I came to homeroom, you guys. So just wanted you to know that, you know, my shoes were stinky. I left them in my locker before I came to homeroom because I didn't want to offend my two favorite people.
I really appreciate that, especially considering that we're all so close together physically.
Come on. Do you guys don't remember the homeroom, you know, waiting out and in the waiting for the bell to put you to homeroom? You're hanging out by your locker, you know, maybe hanging out with, you know, a friend, a partner, a lover, and that bell rings and you're like, oh my God, I gotta get into my homeroom. Jess is laughing.
What does this have to do with stinky shoes?
Well, and then, or, you know, and so the other thing was is the quick dash to stow away into your locker any of the things that weren't considered suitable for
class. I think students today would relate to that more, Tim, than I can remember, because I know most students have pretty strict rules in their schools about, like, less than, I think it's a max of 5 minutes passing time. Mm. So they can't even get to their locker.
I never used my locker when I was in high school. I didn't have time.
Yeah, this is common. I think the younger generation, Tim, can relate more to having to, if they have time to get to their locker, to stashing into it. And I know when I was teaching high school, a lot of students shared a locker because it was closer to that first hour, or they didn't use it and they were allowed to bring backpacks to class. But nowadays, I don't think students are even allowed to carry backpacks through the school. So, you know, I can see that there are probably students out there who can relate to having to stuff their backpack in their locker in that 4 minutes that they have, you know, between passing to get to that first hour class. But I'm glad I'm here. You know, it's the beginning of the week, Tim. You know, 1 week under my belt teaching in the new semester. It felt great. Not going to lie. It's always good to be in class. And here we are for our week, you know, coming off of a week of great episodes. Listeners, remember, you can download, you know, last week's homeroom if you didn't catch it, and the class in session. And we're ready to go this week and kick it off, you know, right here. You got Busted Pencils.
It's great to be back here in homeroom. Always actually love
great
Monday.
Great day for Busted Pencils.
Yeah, it's a great day for Busted Pencils. And again, I love Monday mornings because, you know, it's just ready to go and open up a new chapter and potentially start all over again. Drop behind me all of the pain and suffering that was developed over the past week. Start all over. I don't know.
Pain and suffering, Tim. Sorry.
Hey, in your locker, but you brought the stinky attitude.
I know. It's, well, you know, and people know, or maybe they don't. We'll do a whole episode on kind of the whole idea of where do we situate ourselves when it comes to, you know, taking care of our own mental health and dysregulation and things like that, because, you know, it's okay to have conversations about that. So maybe give a little preview that one day we should have especially with Teacher Hallie and Teacher Joanna, Educators Amplified, a really nice discussion about regulation, truly the standpoint of going, what is it that we can do? Because I was reading an article this morning saying, you know, as we're coming into President Trump and the next 4 years, we may all need some forms of self-regulation practices that allow us to, you know, deal with some of the things that are going to happen. Speaking of dealing with things, though, we've talked about our boy, Michael Petrilli from the Fordham Foundation.
Your guy.
My buddy.
Aren't claiming that.
He's, you know, he's always just so wonderful about not admitting defeat. The fact that the Petrillis, the education quote, as they dubbed themselves, the reformers, you know, the accountability hawks, the No Child Left Behind people, the Race to the Top people. I mean, that was the good old days when both parties horrendously went after teachers in public schools and beat the living crap out of kids and everything like that. Those were the good old days. And he just wants to get them back, but he's got a new piece in the FordhamInstitute.org, his little special blog called The Flypaper, Education Reform in Red versus Blue States.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that it was an interesting take because he somehow seems to also be really locked in on the fact that there always was one team that was truly committed to ed reform. And if we're going to look at it today, it's still that team. And he kind of comes across and saying, like, look, if you want to talk about ed reform, it's the Republicans. They're the ones who want to do ed reform. And the Democrats are just, you know, lapping up luxuries at the table of the unions. So that's a brief overview of his analysis. Johnny, you got that smile. Were you worried where I was going with lapping?
No, I was okay. Catching up on the sarcasm because as our listeners know, if you don't know, I don't always catch the sarcasm. So I was scrambling around thinking, wait, is this something that all of a sudden now Tim is a fan of? Oh no, he's doing the sarcasm.
He's doing the sarcasm, which is, you know, that's Tim's mother tongue. So sometimes it's an interesting dynamic here.
Yeah, you never know.
I'm learning sarcasm as a second language. I'm still struggling with it. But you know, I would say Tim actually, for me, you know, this article is par for the course. In fact, this, you know, proposition that the Republicans are doing ed reform, because they have been doing ed reform, just not the kind of reform that like educated educators or teachers, nonpartisan, right? I'm not talking about whether it's the Democrats' attempt to reform versus the Republicans' attempt. I think it's accurate for me, at least, to say that there is a group of folks who have been actively reforming education. And I could categorize that as privatizing it, as through standardizations, through, you know, products that they often call teacher-proofed curriculums. Mm. You know, standard sets. Not that any good teacher doesn't want there to be standards. It's not anything goes, but you know, those standards initiatives that come, you know, with a price tag, and a prepackaged curriculum, and you know, almost a management and business plan for how to implement in schools. And so the Republican Party, by and large,
has
a strong history of reforming education, our public schools, towards that model. So I was like, okay, credit given where credit's due. There is some ed reform. But when we hear the word reform, folks, and we're, you know, educated educators, we're teachers, or we're folks in the community who are like, hey, I like good, strong public schools. I like my kids learning. I like our future generation kind of being, you know, educated in a way where they feel like they belong. They feel like they found a pathway to a career that contributes to not only their health and well-being, you brought that up at the beginning of the show, Tim, but to the strength of our local economy and our communities. So happy, educated people, right? And we know that schools have done a really good job of making a whole lot of great folks in our community feel like they haven't been successful at education because they're, you know, pushed out of schools. So schools need some reform. The Republican Party and the conservative think groups, you know, the privateers, I think you've called them before.
Well, no, that's Josh Cowan from Michigan State, his book.
The privateers, you know, they have made a pretty strong, clear effort, you know, full transparency. Their effort is to privatize. And it reminds me, Tim, too, of our buddy Jonathan Gerko, who talks about proposing this, you know, need for publicization. So, and I think, Tim, one of the things you brought up too, that's worth talking about in homeroom a little here, is that, you know, by and large, neither party has done a whole lot of good
reform
for education.
Yeah.
Good reform, you know, and I don't know, and this is me being really kind of harsh, I don't know that I hear or see much coming from the Democratic Party right now. But I will say that the article you shared, and you brought up the key point, the attack against teachers unions, you know, came in right on cue. It's like, okay, yeah, he's getting in all the privatization, you know, hot words, all the key words for saying, hey, this is the reform that's going to save our schools. It's not going to save our schools. It's going to hurt them and expand markets. It's a disaster form of capitalism. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sad that it's eaten up our kids and their opportunities. But the idea here is that, you know, they took a shot at teachers unions. And I don't see that right now from our teachers unions. I would be the first to say if I did, because there has been periods of my life where I'm like, hey, teachers unions need to step it up. But I would say right now, especially with we get to have great conversations with Randy Weingarten at the AFT. I mean, they are growing. There's largest membership and support for unions than there's been in decades.
Right.
Right. And we see that by and large, teachers, frontline workers in education, together with nurses who are akin to teaching, frontline workers in the health of our community, are saying, hey, we don't need just better working conditions. We need better facilities. We need better systems. We need better institutional structural support for two really important things this country, education and healthcare. So I do see, I will say, hey, buddy, what is his name? Mike Petrilli? Mike Petrilli. I said, come on, Mike. This is not a fair and accurate representation of what's happening right now, at least with the teacher unions. I'll give him credit on the reform. They can take credit for some reform. You know, not all reform is good for schools and children and teachers. So, yeah, I'll give him that. But don't take a low shot at our unions. Come on now.
Come on. And Jess, what you got here? Interesting, you say.
Just reading through this article, so Michael Petrilli, the article is looking at education reform in, quote, red states versus blue states, and he hits on what education reform needs, what it is, and he talks about two things within the same paragraph that I thought were interesting, and I'm going to throw a little bit of sarcasm in on that.
There you go.
On that interesting. He says that school choice, which we know here is referring to vouchers, which are taking that public school money and putting it into private schooling, as a path for healthy competition that's going to raise all boats, while also bemoaning a lack of accountability and standards. And that just kind of made my head spin a little bit.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Johnny.
Well, I was going to say for our listeners, we've talked about it, Tim and I, here on Busted Pencils before, but this idea of healthy competition and school choice in particular, the rhetoric of school choice, is really code for expanding markets and fully mapping the idea of unlimited growth, which comes from an economic model of capitalism is the only way to do economics, which we know is a dangerous way to think about it, right? And it maps it onto public education. I've used this example before, but for listeners, I think it's helpful to return to. Imagine you might be working at the Best Buy, or I don't even know where people buy televisions anymore. Maybe it's Amazon, but you're a sales manager. You have a sales team, and you're working in a model of economic growth, right? That bases that markets can expand, and there's this false notion. I put in false notion because obviously I'm a critic of this, but there's this idea that that markets are unlimited. There's an unlimited growth possibility here. So let's say I'm a sales manager and our charge is to sell a lot of TVs this quarter. And we work really hard together. We do some team building and my sales folks and people on the floor and everybody at the Best Buy are on the, you know, in the point of service here. And a lot of that's online nowadays, but it still has a sales team. Their goal is to sell so many TVs. Well, let's say we shatter that and we even all get bonuses and incentives for meeting not only our sales goals, but exceeding them. Okay, great. Tim, the next quarter, the sales team is expected to sell more. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the problem on the ground with that, right? Everybody we know already has a new TV. So yes, technology companies and everyone kind of plan, they have this planned obsolescence. What's the new thing? How do we market? And there is some room for like getting people to always need the new thing. And I'm not even saying that maybe that doesn't work with television sales, right? But that idea mapped onto education doesn't work. And that's what they're talking about here. School choice and healthy competition comes from trying to map on that sales marketing business plan model to education. How can we get more schools? How can there be more opportunities, more choices? How do we create competition to have scarcity, right? Demand, right? We talk about like wants and needs, but we talk about also this idea of manufactured demand that will help improve everything. So like the whole idea that everyone's better off with more TVs. So that's not necessarily true. If everyone has one and it works, you know, we don't necessarily need a new one, let alone do we need the people selling even more. Maybe there's like a happy medium. And in education, we simply know that children's learning is not the same as business sales.
And, you know, on this one, though, too, I got to kind of like get Petrilli. I think he also is, though, he's suffering from not realizing that even the Republicans in that argument of competition for improving schools, look, they've dropped it because the school choice they're now talking about is unaccountable. There's no comparison. In fact, we're not allowed to know the curriculum. We're not allowed to know the test scores. There's no comparisons there. So there is no competition anymore because it has turned, at least in the Republicans, the conservatives right now, have said private school choice isn't a matter of competition, isn't a matter of whether or not schools do better. It's a matter of a parent's right to pick whatever freaking school they want, and the government should not stand in their way. Competition is gone, Johnny. And so Petrilli here, I think he's trying to restart the conversation that he believes that more TVs are better.
Well, I wouldn't say that competition is ever gone. Because we talked about this in a recent show, there's a difference between competitiveness and I want to give credit to all of our great students out there. They're competitors. You know, they're in the game. They're really good learners. But I think what we have here are similar to that idea of manufactured markets. And Jess put it in the chat. You know, we're kind of vibing on that. What's the rhetoric of this choice and healthy competition? And Jess put it into our chat, you know, students always needing a higher score. Right. Mm-hmm. And she all caps higher, right? Because I would say, yeah, what is a higher score? And to be more advanced at each age, you know, like we talk about this, especially like second graders now doing third, fourth grade work, you know, kindergarten now doing standardized testing in some states. This idea that more, and it comes from that, it's contagious. It flows from that language and rhetoric of this idea of healthy competition because our kids are competitors just because. Maybe they can do it doesn't necessarily mean that it's healthy and good and it should be done. But that's become the measure, right? Mm-hmm. Like how many TVs get sold, right? And then let's say, hey, that successful team is now not successful because they haven't sold as more TVs than they sold last quarter. And so we're setting kids up to compete in a false measurement system. That's what I'm kind of emphasizing here. I think they're still competitors, but the game, the rules of the game are shifted. So it's about their test scores and it's about this. I love how Jess put it in all caps, more advanced. Kind of put it in scare quotes there. Mm-hmm. And it's a dangerous game and we've been playing it. And that is the game that also, Tim, to speak to that idea of that it's about parental choice, right? I believe that they're shifting that rhetoric to also associating it to, you know, your liberty as a democratic citizen, because by and large, because the data, the facts show us that students don't necessarily do better by these alternatives and these sort of watered down markets for education. Right. Bottom line, markets should not be part of public schools. And I know that's cringe for the market, you know, church out there, for the folks who are real big on like, let the markets be our God. But hey, some things aren't great to privatize and have be a market, and education is one of those.
Well, before the bell rings for first period, though, one little point I want to circle back to, and it's unions and Democrats and realizing this, there is a real space and opportunity right now to grab a hold of real reform, Johnny, what we're talking about, liberating education the ability to serve all students, to lift communities, to get behind that. The unions, in fact, this is where the unions can really drive this leadership. And I think that would really drive the Petrillis crazy, is to see unions really leading that charge, not to get on the old reform bandwagon, but to get on this vision of, let's just call them, beautiful schools that are doing wonderful things for all kids. And that might mean that there are certain forms of education, certain curricula, certain pathways that are open for all of those diverse learners in those diverse communities, because that is a real engaging way that we can liberate, Johnny, as you say, schooling from, or liberate education from schooling. And now for your moment of zen. If those in charge of our society, politicians, corporate executives, and owners of press and television can dominate our ideas, they will be secure in their power. They will not need soldiers patrolling the streets. We will control ourselves.
Thanks for listening to Busted Pencils. Don't forget to grab this special class in session this Wednesday. Dr. Howard Gardner, pioneer of multiple intelligences and the synthesized mind, class in session this Wednesday. And free throws and face-offs on Friday. Jason Bucheri for Saturday's full hour show. You can catch that on all the civic media networks. And keep busting pencils.